So there's no doubt the market switched in 2018, and it did really coincide with the announcement of the Royal Commission. You know, we started to see a shutdown in lending and banks started to really make it a lot tougher for people to borrow. And it's not as bad as some commentators have said. And, you know, with our index, what we found was definitely Sydney dropped. Definitely Melbourne dropped. We definitely have seen a change in sentiment, but we don't have that critical bit of job loss and economic decline. And it kind of doesn't intuitively make sense that we're in crash conditions. It does make sense, though. We probably overshot in Sydney and Melbourne, and now we're coming back again.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent magazine for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers and leaders. Each episode, we bring you behind-the-scenes coaching, news analysis, exclusive interviews, technology and more to help you list more, sell more and elevate your results. To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe.
Hey, hey, Samantha McLean from Elite Agent. Well, we're well and truly back into the swing of things for 2019, and already it's shaping up to be an eventful year in the property market, with things maybe not as bad as they seemed towards the end of late last year. At least this is what the numbers are saying in realestate.com.au's latest property outlook. My guest this week is the author of the report, Chief Economist Nerida Connersby. Not only is she one of Australia's leading property experts providing regular market commentary around Australia, she also has that wonderful gift of making the complex economic and statistical topics simple enough for everyone to easily handle the inevitable conversations that start with how's the market or what's going to happen with negative gearing, whether it happens to come from clients or friends and family. In this podcast, we break down what's happening with prices and values in all the capitals and regions. Some of it is good news, plus all the hot topics of conversation around the upcoming election and what the best and worst case scenarios might be. There's a link to the report with a breakdown of all the numbers around the country, including suburbs to watch, in the show notes. But for now, grab a pen, jot down a few of your own notes as you're listening. I'm pretty sure you'll use them a fair bit over the next few months. Enjoy the show.
So welcome to the podcast, Nerida Connersby.
Thanks for having me.
So we're here to talk about the Property Outlook Report, and you are REA's chief economist. So tell us what a chief economist does, first of all.
My role is basically a mix of media. I do probably about half of my role is developing reports, speaking to media, developing an outlook to be able to provide our customers and our consumers with an idea of what's going to happen in the market.
So we can all stay abreast of what is going on with prices and things like that.
That's right. And I suppose the thing is that we do have an amazing insight because we have probably the access to the most data across Australia, because not only do we have all the pricing data then after we purchased HomeTrack, but we also have a lot of search data, which does provide a bit of an interesting insight as to what's happening in the market.
So I was going to ask you, this property outlook goes into some great detail on house prices and apartment prices and demand for property. So what does property demand mean? Like, what's the exact definition of it as far as realestate.com.au is concerned?
When we talk about property demand, we're talking about views per listing. And
so that's actual consumers coming onto the site.
Tapping on. So typically what we find is a suburb that is very, very high demand, we'll see sort of 10,000 plus views per listing. And those suburbs do tend to then go on to see better price growth. And then on the other end of the scale, we see some suburbs with very low views per listing. So I think some of the lowest are a suburb with a prison in it, for example, we'll see around 250 views per listings. So not only do we track the relativities between suburbs, but we also look at changes in what's happening with demand, because it became really clear, you know, we started looking at Hobart 4 years ago, that we were starting to see a big surge of activity, but at the time prices weren't moving. But obviously that surge of activity then did lead to very strong price growth in Hobart. So it is an interesting measure for us to look at.
I suppose then you could tell what are the up-and-coming suburbs as well. So you'd have a good view now of what consumers, if I can't afford, say, X suburb, then I might have a look at the next suburb, which will obviously be the next area of price growth.
Yeah, absolutely, like a trickle-down effect. And it was really interesting, at the start of last year, I wrote an article about Margate in Tasmania. Margate was really interesting because it was a suburb that went from being pretty unpopular to very popular. So I saw the biggest jump in terms of views per listing, and Margate ended up seeing 20% price growth the following 12 months. So it does seem to be a pretty good indicator, and so much so that, you know, when people talk about hotspots, they're often just kind of talking about their own view as to what's happening in the market. And some of those views can be very well educated. But ultimately, it does come down to the fact people want to be in certain locations, and that does lead to stronger demand and it does lead to prices increasing.
Absolutely. So how do you come up with the median price? So I know that there's a lot of complicated maths behind it, but explain it to me like I'm seven.
We use a median, but we've also developed an index as well. So with a median, it's basically you take 10 sales and you pick the middle sale, you know, 11 sales or whatever, but you pick basically the middle sale value and that's your median. So on a suburb basis, that's typically what we would report. On a capital city basis and on a national basis, the median does jump around a lot because what happens is from month to month, you don't always sell the same types of properties. And so we developed an index using a methodology that came out of HomeTrack in the UK. So that's been running for about 23 years. We've applied it to the Australian market. And what the index tries to do is to take into account that from month to month, you're going to get potentially some sales of the same properties, but probably not. So then it attempts to model the fact that similar properties will sell for similar pricing. And there's a lot of manipulation that has to go on to get to that level, which is why when people talk median, it often doesn't change that much depending on who you're talking to, because everyone's kind of got the same data. But when you develop an index, depending on your methodology, you can get quite different results in terms of what's happening with the index.
So the index is much more reliable.
The aim is to make it more reliable and to make it more reflective of the entire market as opposed to just the sales that occurred in any given month.
Okay, so there was a lot of negativity towards the end of last year. There was a lot of people saying, oh, the market's softened and the market's changed, and definitely a lot of people doing it quite tough in Sydney and Melbourne, having those critical conversations about the value of their properties. But it wasn't all bad news. There were some suburbs, you've just touched on Hobart, experienced price growth, Brisbane experienced price growth. I think Adelaide was still
a strong one.
So just give us a bit of a broad overview of 2018 as you see it.
Yeah, so there's no doubt the market switched in 2018, and it did really coincide with the announcement of the Royal Commission. You know, we started to see a shutdown in lending and banks started to really make it a lot tougher for people to borrow. And that then led to investors in particular. Their activity dropped significantly, and so much so that by the end of last year, we'd seen investor lending drop 30% from peak. But first home buyers were back, you know, so there was a big change in the dynamic. But really what happened, confidence shifted and we did see price falls in Melbourne and Sydney. It's not as bad as some commentators have said. And, you know, with our index, what we found was definitely Sydney dropped, definitely Melbourne dropped, but we're not seeing a price crash. And the thing that we see in price crashes historically is you see forced sales. So people have to get out of the market. They can't afford to pay off their homes. They've probably lost their jobs or they're worried about their jobs. And, you know, the last time we saw that was during the GFC, that, you know, that was a time, particularly here in Sydney, that there was a lot of distress. Unemployment went up. It went up in white-collar jobs, very well-paid white-collar jobs, and that then had a big impact on the property market. This time round, we definitely have had a change in market in that we definitely don't have as many investors. We definitely have seen a change in sentiment, but we don't have that critical bit of job loss and economic decline. And it kind of doesn't intuitively make sense that we're in crash conditions. It does make sense, though. We probably overshot in Sydney and Melbourne, and now we're coming back again.
It feels like everyone's a bit more just wait and see. Let's wait and see what happens next. And I agree with you, the job figures aren't down.
We've got 5% unemployment at the moment. It's the lowest we've been for a long time. So fundamentally, the drivers are there for supporting housing. And there was a lot of alarmist commentary when the Royal Commission was announced that, for example, someone on an $80,000 income would only be able to borrow $200,000. And, you know, it certainly hasn't come to that. And to the extent that APRA at the end of last year lifted the cap on interest-only loans, the Royal Commission is increasingly looking like it won't be focusing on the home loan market. It'll be focusing more on fees for no service and charging dead people fees and superannuation. But I think people thought, given how strong the housing market was at the time, they thought that there would be this massive focus on the home loan market. But the reality is it was looked at. There was some situations where there was some inappropriate lending, but it wasn't the main focus of the Royal Commission. The worst was that 60 Minutes report, Bricks and Slaughter. I mean, a 40% price decline for a country is so catastrophic that, you know, so a good example would be Japan, places where they're losing people. And, you know, that's where we see those 40% declines. You don't see it in a country like Australia that is seeing economic growth, is seeing population growth. You know, there's all these fundamentals that do drive property, and ultimately it's more people, more jobs.
Yeah. Some of the regions are doing quite well, because we'll present the auction results on a Monday and then I'll get a few emails from readers who'll say, but hang on a second, we're in Ballarat or Geelong or something like that, and we've had 100% clearance rate. What are you talking about? So from your view, what's happening in the regional areas?
Yeah, look, Geelong is going gangbusters at the moment. You know, we've seen for quite some time now very, very high levels of demand on our site. I mean, so much so, I think East Geelong made the top 10 nationally in terms of views per listing in our most recent report. We've seen places like Manifold Heights do very well. So it sort of started around the train line to Melbourne. Like, there's a lot of stations in kind of inner Geelong that started to do very well. So it kind of looked like there was a lot of young people moving there.
I was going to say, in Geelong is really an area where they're putting in a lot of infrastructure at the moment, really ramping up education, and they're trying to make it a tech hub and all sorts of stuff like that.
Yeah, and you can just see clearly the impact on housing. You know, the budgets are interesting too, both the state and federal budgets. It was more money for roads, for the airport. Everything about Geelong is linking it better to Melbourne, and the better you link it to Melbourne, the more Melbourne-like the pricing's going to get.
So we can't forget these other little areas that happen to be doing really well when everyone's saying Sydney, Sydney.
Yes, no, totally. It is true, because I think Sydney, it is obviously the biggest market, but what happens in Sydney does tend to get overstated when you compare in the realities. Property markets are highly variable. You know, I always compare it to, say, the stock market, that you wouldn't say Facebook and BHP are the same sorts of company, but, you know, in the same way that you can't say Sydney and Adelaide are the same sorts of markets. But, you know, property does often just get lumped into one, and then people sort of talk about this national market when the drivers are just so diverse, not just from a city to city, even in a suburb basis, even within a suburb, it can be quite different.
Yes, that's a really interesting way of looking at it, because we're so conditioned to hear all ordinaries, but there's a whole bunch of things going on within that one number. So, you know, it's actually useful to remember that the same principle applies to the property market. So there are two big events coming up this year. We've already talked about one of them, which is the Royal Commission, and we're thinking that that probably won't impact the property market that much. What about the federal election? Because hashtag ScoMo has said there's going to be one probably in May. What sort of an impact do you think the federal election will have?
There'll be a number of impacts. I guess the first one, we know listing volumes drop during an election, so people choose not to sell. They, for whatever reason, maybe they're waiting for greater stability politically. Perhaps they think people will be too busy to look at their homes. We're not exactly sure, but there's no doubt listing volumes in that 3-week lead up to the election will be pretty light on. The second factor will be around Canberra. So, you know, if we do see a change of government, it will be good for the Canberra market. I mean, Canberra's been a really strong market the last few years. Labor governments are typically bigger governments, but, you know, even if it doesn't end up being a bigger government, we know that in the early stages of a new government, there does tend to be more consultants hired, and as a result, there's kind of all this jobs growth and activity in Canberra. So Canberra will do pretty well if there's a change of government. But then the big one is around negative gearing and capital gains tax concessions, and there's been tons of groups that have done modelling around the impact on pricing and also on rental levels. And pretty much everyone agrees there'll be a hit on pricing and prices will go backwards. And it makes sense, you know, intuitively it makes sense. We've seen it when investors have drawn back in the market, the prices drop. So that makes sense. And then the other impact will be around rental levels. You know, negative gearing has been successful in getting more mum and dad investors into the market. We know a lot of investors rely heavily on negative gearing to make it stack up. So take away those measures, then, you know, there's fewer investors, and that means fewer rental housing, and there's no one else providing rental housing in Australia, so there'll be fewer rental housing and that will push up rents. So that will be the bigger issue, and it's an issue that the ALP have put it forward and they've said they're going to proceed with it. It may take a while for the impacts of that to come through, and it will be variable depending where you are. So if you're in, say, Hobart, where there's already a rental crisis, this will be really tough for Hobart. It will be tough for Canberra. You know, Canberra doesn't have much rental housing. Eastern suburbs, Sydney doesn't have enough rental housing. You know, so there's going to be pockets that will be hit really hard. And then you've got regional areas where you can still negative gear in new properties. But in places, I always bring up Wagga, but, you know, Wagga is such a good example, because in Wagga, a lot of people rent because it is a market that does rely on defence and education and medical. And, you know, a lot of people aren't necessarily there a long time. So a lot of people renting, but it's not a city that sees a lot of population growth. So there's no new development. So you have problems in these regional areas as a result of the policy. So at this stage, look, I don't think the policy will work, but, you know, they're pressing ahead with it. And either something will happen and it magically works, or alternatively, they'll have to start to adjust. But it does lead to a lot of disruption in the property market when you start to fiddle around with policy at a national level when a lot of property markets are very localised.
Just following on from what you said then is, if the rental crisis exacerbates because of pulling away negative gearing and housing is unaffordable in that area, then that's not going to be good at all, right?
No, and I think this is the thing. When the ALP announced the policy, we did have problems with first home buyers. Like, we could clearly see that investors and first home buyers were looking at the same sorts of properties, and a lot of first home buyers were very frustrated by the fact that they just couldn't get into the market. That's not the case now. You know, we can see first home buyers are very active through housing finance figures, and in Sydney in particular, they're the most active in, you know, 5 or 6 years. You know, we haven't seen so many in the market for quite some time. But for renters is, you know, it's a more sensitive issue because typically people renting are lower income. If you're a single parent, you're more likely to be a renter. Renters do find it harder to get into the property market if they've been renting a long time. And they're also more highly impacted by market forces. As an example, if you'd bought in Richmond in Melbourne 10 years ago, you're probably paying off the same on your mortgage as you were 10 years ago. But if you were renting in Richmond 10 years ago, you're probably paying a lot more now on your rent. So you've got a situation where renters are very sensitive to what happens to the market and more sensitive to very minor increases in rental rates.
Interest rates. Will there be any true breaking news this year? I mean, we always have a bit of a joke about breaking news, you know, every month when the Reserve Bank sit down for their tea and biscuits. What do you think is going to happen with interest rates this year?
It's too early to tell. I mean, we did have that great GDP growth figure in June. In September, it pulled back. And at that time, you started to see some commentators saying, oh, they're going to cut. You know, it was suddenly this switch because we had one figure that was looking a little bit more negative. I mean, the Reserve Bank haven't adjusted their position in that they've said interest rates probably won't move for a while, but the next movement will be up. And that reflects the fact that they're still confident the economy is moving in the right direction and things are going pretty well. I think the reality of what's happening is they're sitting still. They'll wait until we get the December quarter GDP figures. They're always looking at everything and they'll be watching every data point like they do every time ABS releases more data and making an assessment there. But, you know, at this stage, it still looks like stability for now, and who knows what will happen at the end of the year.
So they're doing more than a cup of tea and a touch base.
Yeah, I mean, you look at that. There's a whole building in Sydney full of economists. So, you know, and I do get invited. They have a quarterly lunch that I occasionally go to. And, you know, there's no doubt that they're looking at everything very, very carefully and they're analysing everything to the nth degree. They're not looking at one GDP figure and making a call. So a lot of work that does go into the final outcome of what the interest rate announcement will be.
And so you think it'll probably hold for this year?
I think so at this stage. There's certainly not enough strength to be able to start increasing. And we did get that great, really low unemployment figure, which was really positive, but still not flowing through to wages growth, still not flowing through to inflation. So we're still in a situation where there's no reason to increase, but similarly, it's not like it's so catastrophic that there's any reason to cut as well.
What about some of the other factors that might affect the property market? Maybe less so than the ones we've talked about, but APRA, I think we're one of the countries that has quite a bit of intervention in the economy by various parties. What do you think APRA is going to get up to this year?
I think they will be easing up. I mean, they've said it. I mean, at the end of last year, they felt that the risks around interest-only loans had passed through, and as a result, they did that lifting. I just can't see them cracking down on lending anymore because investors have backed off. Investors are very sensitive to policy changes, and they've been completely spooked, so they're gone. Well, they're not gone, but, you know, they have pulled back. First home buyers are back in the market. So, you know, that's a positive. Prices have come off. You know, there's been a stabilisation. A lot of the things that they were worried about have changed and have changed quickly. You know, if you think the Royal Commission was announced at the end of 2017, by the end of 2018, we had a vastly different market within a 12-month time period.
Stamp duty. So New South Wales announced some changes to the stamp duty regulations, which the guys out there might be quite familiar with. Can you explain what's going on with stamp duty?
So the New South Wales government have reduced stamp duty. It's not very much, like maybe $100 people are saving. So it's hard to get too excited. They've also indexed to inflation. So that may work a little bit in home buyers' favours, given that prices are going backwards. So that's positive as well. But it's not a big change. I mean, it's more positive than negative. It's good that they're reducing it. A lot of economists do prefer a land tax situation, but very difficult to switch to a land tax situation when people have already paid stamp duty. So, you know, I don't think politically it would be very popular if state government did that. And we also know that state governments are highly reliant on stamp duty. So it's a big factor in transacting. If you're in Sydney in particular, and you're hit with a 20, 30 grand stamp duty bill if you want to move, it does make more sense to say, well, I may as well renovate because at least I can get the kitchen I want for 20, 30 grand as opposed to selling, giving that 20, 30 grand to government and maybe not getting the home exactly like you want it.
What about some international things like Brexit and Trump? They're both in the news a lot lately. To what extent do you think those factors are going to affect us in the next 12 months?
Yeah, I mean, Brexit, I mean, yeah, there was a no deal on the thing that Theresa May was trying to get through. But, you know, I think Brexit has very little impact on the Australian market. We're not relying on the UK economy for our economic growth. I think they're our seventh or eighth largest trading partner. So they don't have a huge impact in terms of what our growth will do. You know, we do get a lot of search activity out of the UK, particularly in Manly, for example. But, you know, I don't think the Manly market's going to crash. Yeah. I mean, it might go do quite well if people from the UK decide to leave the UK as a result. But so Brexit, probably not so much, but definitely the trade war between the US and China could have a massive impact. And we are so reliant on China for our economic growth. We're exporting a lot there. Students, for example, our housing market has been very dependent on China. So if there is a trade war and it can't be sorted out, we start to see economic growth start to slow dramatically in China, that will hit Australia. So, you know, when we talk about interest rates, that could be a factor where the Reserve Bank then need to cut because the Chinese economy starts to drag down our economy.
So following on from that, what about foreign investment?
So I talked about local investors being spooked, but the offshore investors have definitely been spooked. We've seen it in FIRB approvals that they've backed off dramatically. We still see a lot of search activity out of Asia. So we saw it drop a lot in Sydney, but Melbourne seems to be growing still. So I think they're still very interested in Australia and they're still very curious as to what things are selling for and the like. We also know that, especially from Asia, which is really where the majority of volume is coming from, they're still very interested in our education sector. And so it won't dry up in its entirety because still a lot of people are sending their kids here to study. Buying something kind of makes sense. You can kind of park some cash here. Your kid can live in it. The other issue, though, that is impacting the Asian market is a lot of the negative media coming out about Australia is hitting that market really hard. We own portals throughout Asia and I was doing some work in Hong Kong and the word on the street around Australia is it's overpriced, prices are crashing, don't go there. Have a look at Japan, have a look at Thailand, you know, have a look anywhere, but don't look at Australia. So, you know, I think that's the other problem too, that sentiment has really shifted across Asia.
Fake news.
Yeah, well, yeah, sure, Sydney and Melbourne aren't doing too great. Lots of places to buy in Australia.
Yeah, absolutely. And what about something that made the headlines a fair bit last year, speaking of a good headline, is Bitcoin. What do you see happening with cryptocurrency in the next 12 months?
I suppose my problem always with cryptocurrency is that it's not really backed by anything. So, you know, it's not like you buy a house and you've got the house and you've got the land. You buy shares in a company, you know, it's quite tangible what you're buying. But with cryptocurrency, it's kind of like, are you buying the technology? What sort of fundamental value in what you're buying? I do think the future of currency is digital, but at this stage, I certainly feel much more comfortable getting Australian dollars than any of the cryptocurrencies. I think they have certainly come back a lot in terms of value. I mean, there's so many of them now, so I think that's an issue. I think the ability to transact quickly has been a problem with cryptocurrency that, you know, you really want to sell at the peak when you've got it, but it can be quite time consuming to sell. So, yeah, I don't think we'll see such hype around it in 2019.
All right. So any other predictions for 2019 as far as the market goes or as far as values go or anything like that?
Yeah, look, I think the first half of 2019 will kind of be quite similar to the last half of 2018. I think, you know, we'll probably still see a bit of a fall in Melbourne and Sydney. Brisbane's pretty stable. Adelaide's hit its highest median ever and got its first $2 million suburb. You know, so I think you'll see quite different situation in Hobart and Adelaide and Brisbane to what you're seeing in Melbourne and Sydney. I think that will continue. The more interesting half will be second half, and at that stage we will get a clearer idea long term as to what the impact of the negative gearing changes are. We'll know for sure what's happening with access to finance and whether that's easing up. So I think that will be the trigger as to suggest the direction of the market from next year forward.
So it's certainly going to be an interesting 12 months ahead of us. Nerida Conisbee, thank you so much for joining us and helping us deconstruct what's going on in the market right now.
Thanks for having me.
To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe.